It's at Camelback Ranch. That he wanted to not be in Boston. Although there might be reasons why you don't. As a black superstar, there might be reasons why you don't. But
smack pack.
But it didn't seem that that was the case. That this guy, I was reading some of the pieces that are being written in the Boston Globe, that after playoff games, he is going out and feeding the homeless. Like this is the type of guy that you draw up, mm-hmm. that you create in a lab and say, this is the person that should be wearing whatever your team's emblem is.
I wrote the same thing about Bryant.
And you want to, I read it while I was in Miami, and you just want to just say, no. You know what's a good idea? While we're in this championship window, let's allow for ownership to kick it down the road, kick the can down the road, and tell us how great Alex Verdugo is until he has to get paid, and then he's going to get vilified too.
It's not just them having to trade Mookie Betts with the 1 year left either and maximizing their value down the line. It's as you do this, as you take Betts, who, as you say, Lawrence, and perfectly so, is like a perfect specimen of an MLB player. He's the guy that you want to shape your franchise around because of what he is on and off. You also package him with David Price, ensuring that you do not get the best return for Mookie Betts' talent. So if Boston wants to shape this around, we have to make sure that we're a viable winner for the next handful of years. This isn't global warming, fellas. This isn't something where you've got to watch out for future generations. It's win damn baseball games. And there's a lot better way to do that, even if you are trading Mookie Betts, than packaging up David Price's contract, shipping him off to Boston, and settling for two guys that might make up a quarter of the value Mookie Betts is going to create in the next two seasons.
It just breaks my heart because it seems that there is a contingent of the fan base that is okay on the business side of it from the aspect of the owners. Is the line from North Dallas 40, when we say it's a game, they say it's a business. When we say it's a business, they say it's a game.
Yeah.
And how so easily that contingent of fans is drawn into by ownership to believe whatever it is they said because that's the team that they root for in these situations, or because there is jealousy because you're not making $300 million and I wish someone would offer me $300 million. Yes, in the fantasy land, we all would love to be offered $3 million, but if we were worth $375 million, being offered $300 million would be an insult to us.
These players work their asses off for a $375 million contract. Most of the ownership groups in baseball were born with silver spoons and trust funds. And yet, for whatever reason, people are more likely to root for those who were born into it than those who worked for it. And I don't know why.
And over and over again, in baseball in particular, they are sitting on piles of money. They are sitting on piles of money before we open the gates and people walk through the turnstiles. The amount of money that they have made on MLB Advanced Media is through the roof. There are teams that last year, they got all the teams in Major League Baseball last year got $50 million each. From MLB BAM, and the Pirates are sitting here with a $42 million payroll. It drives me insane.
There's another aspect that you're not bringing up that we did early in the show, too, and that is the gain in value, the surplus, I should say, in value that you got on these contracts when they started, these arbitration-tiered contracts. FanGraphs calculates the value of your performance in dollars per win that you accrue. You are worth $8 million. Your team is getting $8 million of value for a one-win player. In Mookie Betts' MVP season, whatever they were paying him that year, $15 million, whatever it was, he was worth $83 million of value. So the difference between what you paid him and what he was worth in quality above replacement, in dollar value, let alone jerseys sold, attendance, eyes on your television broadcast, beer, let alone all of that, just in value. Chris Bryant, since 2015, has been worth $222 million. And you've been able to have him on the cheap. And then it's like, well, I don't know.
And how much has the franchise itself increased in value.
Untold amounts.
Right, which is different from cash flow.
Yes.
That's different from profitability, but just the value of the asset. If you ever wanted to borrow against it, you've tripled the value of your team. And Chris Bryant's been worth $222 million, and now it's like, payroll flexibility.
He's literally the guy that fielded the last out of the World Series.
And he's seemingly a good guy and good for your franchise. And walking away from the acceptance of walking away from people like that is difficult to deal with.
It's not what sports is supposed to be.
It's not.
It's not fun.
But you're right about the change, Lawrence, and I don't know when it happened.
Hold on. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
As fans, we used to fret about losing our players. When the White Sox won the division in 83, I remember Julio Cruz was a free agent. And I remember the outcry. Oh, my gosh. Are we going to lose Juice Cruz? He was part of the win. And was it kind of wrong in some respects and just maybe not really understanding the difference between future performance and past performance and what you're paying for? Maybe kind of. Maybe we just weren't as informed, and maybe there was an attachment there that wasn't absolutely dispassionate in a way that it might be now, but it swung so wildly in the other direction for people caping for ownership and finding somebody. It has made me really unhappy to hear the number of people who aren't merely understanding the probability that Chris Bryant would be traded, but advocating for
and it. Trashing him. And trashing him in doing it.
That's what I don't get. And I know in Boston, the same thing's happening with Mookie Betts. There's some other things perhaps at work there. But I don't. Chris Bryant sucks. He doesn't get 100 RBIs. That's what I don't understand. Then you're just, why are you a fan?
Right.
There's a text in here, 708, Paul from Milwaukee. In fact, he signed it. I'm so sick of the trope that baseball fans are more inclined to root for Silver Spoon owners over the players. It's just flat out wrong. Fans are fans of the team, not the player. They also aren't fans of the owner, but as a fan, the owner rarely, if ever, changes your team. It's Paul from Milwaukee. Here's why that's just wrong. The owners put the luxury tax in. They wanted a built-in, simple, and seemingly fair excuse to the low market teams. Oh, we won't go over $208 million. How could we? The owners voted on this. They created a situation in which people are justifying the second best player in baseball getting traded for almost nothing 1 year before he hits free agency. They created a situation where they get to manage all of this PR. And that's a problem. I mean, this has been a struggle for a while.
And I do wonder what happens with that. If that would be something that if I were part of the Players Association, I would not want in the next CBA.
No, I wouldn't either, but they won't win it.
I know.
That's a long work stoppage.
But we've been doing this for a while. Like, think about where ownerships began in baseball, with basically indentured servitude, with keeping players of a certain color out of baseball. I mean, this is the trek down the other side of the spectrum has been a long one. I wrote a thesis on Curt Flood in college, and people were then, in the coverage then, going, "Wah, I don't know, Kurt, what's he think he's going to get? $200,000 a year?" Yeah!
Yes.
That's what guys are worth. It's bizarre to me to not realize the genesis of why this is exploding on the Red Sox, exploding on the Cubs.
And I think that you're right, Dan. I think that there is a disassociation with fandom, maybe as some of us get older. And I get it. I understand it. That you do. Maybe you're just into rooting for your tribe, rooting for the color. You're rooting for the name on the front of the jersey because that will ideally never leave you. Like that will ideally never leave you. But there's a part of this that's just like these guys have earned it. We're not talking about guys that haven't. We're talking about guys that have actually produced and have done everything that you've asked them to do. And in Bryant's case, did everything that you asked him to do, even though he had filed a grievance against you because of the way that you played around with his service time. Even though he had done that, he still was there smiling and selling your product and playing as hard as he could. And to have that guy or Mookie Betts or Francisco Lindor then end up being the bad guys in this, it leaves a terrible taste in my mouth.
There's something that needs to be, maybe this is something for the near future that is just in the back of my head here. And you brought up with the way we as fans relate to our teams. Maybe it's just less personal. And it's ironic considering how social media you'd think would make it more so with some of the interactions and some of the connectivity that we have with players as people and with wanting to root for guys rather than it just being a name or it just being a tribe or an affiliation, that we should want to root for Mookie Betts as our guy. We should want to root for Chris Bryant and Francisco Lindor as our guy because of who they are. You know, when Charles Tillman was a Bear, it made it very easy to root for him. I don't know that it matters that much anymore. I mean, we see it. I felt it and feel it a little bit with Javier Baez. There's something else there. There is an extra bit of connection there that is being forged. And maybe it would be maybe that would be the player. If it's not Bryant, someone else confronted
Dan,
with it.
Let me tell you something. Part of the reason that right now he doesn't get the same scorn as Bryant is that there's this idea that, well, Javi's going to sign his extension. Wait to the moment that he doesn't. And wait till you see how people turn on him too. They'll turn on him too. They'll call him greedy and flashy.
They'll hate those strikeouts again.
He can't hit a slider. Why would you give him $325 million? When that happens, it's just ugly. It's just really, really ugly. And again, if you want to look at it from a cold place, I understand that. But this shift...
You're not the owner.
The shift into caping for ownership is bizarre. It is absolutely bizarre. That is Dan Bernstein and Connor McKnight. Thank you guys very much for a fun conversation about some serious baseball stuff. I'm Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. The top of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Remaining home opponents include Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota. Single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now in NewSports.com. And this hour is being brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
On the Lawrence Holmes Show.
I look at bad teams and go, well, someone has to score. And I get that he's doing it at a pretty elite level, but someone has to score for them. And none of the rest of these guys can really get buckets. They're okay, but they can't really get buckets. So there's part of me that feels like his success this year and the All-Star campaign for Zach LaVine is predicated on the fact that he's on a team that can't get buckets.
Did you say All-Star campaign?
No, not All-Star Cameron Payne.
Make me a bicycle clown.
No one's ever going to say that. Ever. Welcome in. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock today. We have a lot of stuff planned for the show. Steven Nelson of MLB Network is going to join me at 1 o'clock. I want to talk with him about the AL Central, NL Central, Cubs and White Sox. Ooh, at some point today, boys, can we talk about the spring training caps? At some point, we don't have to do it now, but please, can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's trash. Have you seen the White Sox cap? It's trash.
It's like somebody designed that. Then the person who's that person's boss is like, you know what? Fine. And then the boss of that person's like, let's let that go. And then released it to the public.
It looks like someone got their first like photo editing software.
Yes.
And they just kind of pasted a picture just to see what it looks like and how to actually do it. And then they're like, yeah, we're good.
All right, so I guess we are talking about this now.
Okay, boss, I got this idea. We take every single logo a team has and put it on top of a hat. How's that sound?
Basically, what MLB is doing with the spring training caps, and they do this every spring training, they do something new, is they're going to put two logos together on a cap and then, like, personalize it to the city on the back of the cap. There are a couple that look good. The Astros one, I think, looks good. I think the Padres one looks good with the Friar and the SD in the right colors and the brown and yellow. That looks good. The Blue Jays one, to me, looks good. The White Sox one looks terrible.
It's the worst of them, and it's not close.
It's not even close. Those are two great logos that would be fine by themselves. You know how many White Sox caps I own? I own 15 different White Sox caps. 15! And I looked at that spring training one that also apparently has deep dish pizza on the back, even though tavern style pizza was started on the south side of Chicago. I just turned into Lewis Black there for a minute. Sorry. This looks atrocious.
If they would have just shrunk the SOX, the old English SOX, onto the batterman's shoulder so it fits, it would have been much better. I would not have liked it, but I would have said, okay, I get it.
Yeah. It's problematic. Like, I'm going down to Arizona, and I'm going to be like, really? This is what we're doing? This is bad. Okay, sorry. We meant to start the show this way, as we do with all things, the rundown.
Run them down.
The Rundown.
Here is your rundown for Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. Mookie Betts is now going to be a Dodger because the Red Sox didn't even want to come close to free agency and maybe paying him what he was worth. So they made the trade, and they're going to get Alex Verdugo back.
On his 1-1 from Tinoco, Verdugo swings away, fly ball right field. Different night, same story for a rookie Dodger. Walk-off home run, Alex Verdugo.
Meanwhile, Mookie Betts is the second best player in baseball.
3-1. Oh, my. High fly ball left field. Mookie Betts. Mookie does it again for the third time in three at-bats tonight. Well, this is an MVP bow here at Fenway.
What can you say?
And someone is getting my guy Joe Madden all the presents. Enjoy, Young Jock.
Peterson hits a high fly ball to deep center field. Kane is back. That is gone. Jock Peterson, for the second season in a row, celebrates his birthday with a home run. This one comes on the second pitch of the day. Goes after the first one, hits a rising liner to right, and it's gone again. Jock Peterson's second home run of the day.
And they're also getting Ross Stripling, so he gets a little bit of everything he needs. The Angels team, it might be problematic. It might be problematic. I love that Joe was like, yeah, I'm going to come here, but could you, like, give me a roster to work with? How's that going to go over? Angels find themselves in the playoffs next year.
It's weird that the best player in the game, once he gets other great players around him, will make the playoffs.
Shocking that you could spend money on a guy that's worth $420 million and still sign another guy who's, how much did he get?
$245.
How about that? Along with the number one overseas prospect, and never mind, it's totally fine.
But why would Joe want to leave the Cubs then?
On to the Blackhawks. They played their first divisional game, I want to say, since December 13th. It was a tough blow for the Blackhawks.
Zuccarello after it. They beat Kane in the pocket. Takes a look. Here comes Dumba. Matt Dumba off the bench. In front. Scores! Matt Dumba has won it for the Wild.
You get a point, but you wanted two. But Blackhawks are still in this thing. Hopefully it works out for him. In college sports, Mark D'Antonio resigns from Michigan State by writing a letter after getting a $4.3 million bonus.
Very emotional day today when I told our football team
obviously very sudden, but I felt like that was what was needed. That was the first place I needed to go to tell the people what was going on, my football team. And our coaches were in there at the same time, so they found out as well. I've shared this information with our administration. We've had talks a little bit about that over the past couple weeks, just which direction to go, how to go about it, if I wanted to do it, if I didn't want to do it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it probably has nothing to do with the NCAA and lawsuits, right? Nothing to do with that, with improper terminations and stuff like probably everything. He probably just wanted to spend more time with his family, even though he's going to take another position with the university.
He's going to spend time with Urban Meyer's family.
I mean, they need someone.